Hey y'all, and welcome back to another episode of That Vet Life. My name is Mo, a final year student at the Royal Dix School of Veterinary Studies. I'm entering my final year of vet school. How cool is that? And the idea of graduating and finding a job is becoming more and more real. But what kind of options are even out there? Whether you are interested in going into small animal corporate, or maybe even a private mixed practice, there are things to be learned from every area of vet med, which is why on today's episode, I'm chatting with Rob Tollick, a previous regional director for Medivet. Medivet, if you don't know, is a community of practices found in the south of the UK that is better known not only for their high quality of veterinary care, but for how they care for and mentor their new graduates, which is why I wanted to explore their business model a little bit more. So if you are a new graduate or you're in your final year like myself, I invite you to listen to my conversation with Rob as we discuss mentorship and entering the profession as a newly qualified vet. All right, let's get into it. So this was your first time actually seeing the new building for the new vet school.
Yeah, pretty much. Having been, last time I was here, it literally was 20 years ago.
Yeah, so 20 years ago, this wasn't even built.
No.
You were still at the original, like, stone building that's in the center of town, which
yeah,
a lot of people...
Yeah, Summer Hall, yeah, that was where we went, and then we came out here. We were there for 3 years, and then out here for the last two, and then they were building the first part of the school that you just showed me around, but it's been expanded massively since.
So what did you think of...
This is, it's amazing to walk around and see the facilities you've got. We had them something similar, but just now you have the technology involved as well. It looks cool, and you can imagine. Brilliant place to learn and do all of that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool just to hear the differences from, like, obviously from when you were in school to now. Like, even the class size is different. I think we're probably 60 people more per class, because you said there were like 95?
We had about 95. We broke it down into quarters, and then we worked in groups. In our clinical years, we broke it down into groups of four usually, and then of those fours, you could have fours, eight, 16s, but, you know, quite small numbers. I'm just amazed at how big the place is and how many students are in it.
But yeah, and you did a degree before coming to vet school.
Yeah, I did a biochemistry degree at Liverpool Uni from when that would have been 91 to 94, and then got a place here and did a 5 year at the Dick Vet. So yeah, 8 years.
And 8 years total, yep. I fully understand the pain of that.
Yeah, different how it is from the fees and the funding of it all back then, but still, yeah, came out the end of it owing a few quid and went into... a mixed practice, which I worked for 16 years, 15, 14 of which I was a partner in, and then left that and locumed a small animal. I did the first 16 as a mixed vet practitioner, and then into small animal locuming, which I've done for the last 4 years. And then the last 6 months, I worked as a regional director for Medivet, so one of the corporates, having in my locum work, worked for them and other corporates as well as independents. So I think I have a fairly good idea of what it is to work in all of them, to be fair.
Yeah, so. You've kind of run the gambit for it, because then you fully understand what it looks like as a large animal mixed vet and smallies vet and locum. Like, you literally have run the gambit of it all.
Yeah, and having owned my own place and run that and then gone into other people's businesses as locums, and then the nature of who I am, I get involved with that a little bit. So by the time I sort of got the job I'm in now, I felt I had a good level of experience as to what it is to run and manage and, you know, pick up and run with different ideas. And the job I have now is a management role. It's non-clinical. I have the option if I wanted to do clinical, but invariably too busy to do that. Medivet employs me in the role of a vet to manage other vets and other vet practices, and I work alongside an area manager who comes from a nursing background, and she runs the nursing aspects of the teams and the associated staff. So it works quite well trying to do that job coming from a veterinary background. I think it'd be a much, much different approach if you didn't have that ability to know what other people are going through at the time.
Like you had mentioned, working with other corporate practices, and I guess that what would be one of the big differences is that Medivet is owned by veterinarians. It's by people who understand what their employees like are going through, what work-life balance actually looks like for them.
Yeah, very much so. The thing I liked about it from Medivet when I came to work for them was the fact that the senior partners, the people who own the business, are all vets. And these are guys who set the business up 30 years ago, who banded together to, invariably, I think at the time, to work out their out-of-hours provision to make their life balances work, and then their business took off. But it's still the same guys running it now. And they obviously saw the importance of having people who are going to come in and manage below them as their business got bigger, to be vets as well, and nursing, and coming from the veterinary background. So from that perspective, it feels much more sort of inclusive. You like to think that the people who make the decisions at the top have an understanding of what goes on the shop floor, and the ethos, I think, runs right through the company. From that perspective, you meet people, it's very non-hierarchical, if that's the word. When you meet guys, you know, you go to the support center and you sit down and talk to the main people, the main senior partners, you know, they're very easy to get on with. They know what you're doing, they know what's going on below you at the grassroots level. And I think it as a business model, I think it works quite well.
Yeah,
it works very well, in my opinion.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, I really like the model as a vet student, with the options that they have for EMS and graduate support programs. But mentioning that, like, all the senior partners, they've been there for 30 years, so they've gotten to see how things have changed within veterinary education, the new graduates, with the attrition rates that's happening. And that's part of the reason that, like, from what I've seen, I really like Medivet's model, is because before we were talking about the attrition rates, and there are so many different factors that play into that, because you have, I think we kind of agree that there was this mismatch between what vet students are expecting practice life to be like versus what it actually is, versus what the practice managers are making life like.
Absolutely. There is, the huge mismatch. If people understand what they're going to get in a job in a real term sense when they start working, if as long as that isn't too far away from what they've been doing as a student and what they've been told, then there's a very good chance that they're going to go forward into a job and enjoy it. We're hoping with the EMS program of getting students into the practices, they get to see how Medivet works. We get to meet all these guys, get to form relationships with them. Ultimately, they come out the other end qualified. Then they're looking at the place they're going to go and work. Having already been into the Medivet family, as it were, they can then go forward and say, yeah, I quite liked it there. We know that there's a huge recruitment issue across the profession. Not just in the corporates, in independents, and across the board. Why people leave, we were discussing this earlier. Huge number of issues, and again, one of the main things is this disparity between what people think they're going to get when they have a job and what they actually get. If we can get that understanding of what their future job is going to be like by having good quality student EMS, we can then have the discussions, they can see how the businesses work, and hopefully when they come into it, be in a much, much more informed position. We also then run what I consider to be a very good system, a residency program, where you have a 3 to 6 month program of being mentored for that period of time to make sure you bring your skill level up. Students, we all have fantastic theoretical knowledge, but our practical levels can be, you know, they are less than perfect, and that's just the nature of the beast. However much you do in when you see practice, you're still going to come into the business as lacking that skill level. The residency program allows us to bring that skill level up, monitor it, tick the boxes, make sure everybody's kind of at the same level, so when they go out after the residency, they can be going to either a job in that practice or in another branch or another region at a level that is consistent across the group. And it will work for the students, and hopefully then work for the business and keep this attrition level down, why people leave, and hopefully get people into jobs that they're going to enjoy and enjoy for all the right reasons.
Yeah, it really works from both like a student's perspective and from the business perspective, because like we had mentioned, as you go into a new job as a new veterinarian, this kind of like the first 6 months or to a year where you really are trying to find your feet. Like, you just don't know necessarily what you're doing. I mean, you can have all the knowledge and some skill as much as you can, but you still need someone to kind of walk beside you at certain points and to show you how things are done. And you're not going to be able to get things done at the same rate as someone who's been in the practice for 5-10 years. So for a practice to take on a new graduate, that's already kind of, that's a big deal. Like, they're going to lose money in those first 6 months because of the training, because of the lack of income, because it's just a new vet.
Yeah, the new guys come in that they, in a very blunt term, they don't generate the income that the more experienced vets will do. But you still need to have these people coming into the business. If you perceive them to be a good person and they're going to make a good vet, then yeah, you put the time and energy, the money behind it, the residency program costs the business to get these people up to speed. But at the same time, if we do it effectively, they then stay within the business because they've had a good experience. Yeah, you're not functional. You know, that's not the right word. You're not experienced at that point. But if you're looked after effectively and mentored properly, you are going to get paid. You're hopefully going to be on a good contract. We do a 4-day week and no out of hours. The pay rates are very good. And they say lots of opportunities within the business to further your career. But you've got to start somewhere. And I hear lots of times when I interview people, now one of my main aspects of my job is recruitment. And we have obviously this big recruitment issue is, you know, even very young vets been in the job only 4, 5, 6 months coming excuse me, and saying, you know, I'm doing 50-60 hours, I'm not getting lunch break, this is being put on me, I'm not getting time to do this, I'm expected to do that, and it's not good enough really. And we're properly trying to set up a system now where we're looking after students when we meet them as their students in the vet schools through their first 6 months as a residency and going forward. So we will have buddy systems. You'll have somebody, not only a vet who's mentoring you through a residency, but also somebody of a similar level of experience that you can call upon, who's going to be your mate. You can phone up, this has happened, that's happened. Potentially, you can have the aspects of having some good work-life balance because you've got somebody else out there generally in a similar position, usually around similar ages, so you've got something in common to go forward with. And it's very important that you have that contact. A first job in a different part of the world that you haven't been to before, where potentially you don't have any friends or any of your colleagues or your mates from school, can be quite lonely. So it's trying to find a balance of keeping and looking after the guys when they come and work for us.
That's actually a side I didn't even fully know, because I knew about the, like, a mentorship, like a clinical setting kind of mentorship. But then to have someone that you can just kind of decompress and talk about life with and everything, that is such a huge part. Because I know as a new grad, I hear stories of these people, they go out and they're working in like the middle of Wales and they don't have anybody their age. They don't have anybody to talk with about. And it doesn't matter. You can have like the greatest mentor in the world, but if they're 20, 30 years in practice, they're not going to be able to talk with you on the same life experience level as things.
And that's not uncommon scenario to have. We've got, at the moment in our group, we've got a couple of young guys who have just started as residents, and they're going off on, as well as doing the residency program, there are further CPD events that we hold for the residents who go off for the days and meet other residents, and they'll get put up in hotels and looked after and fed and watered. And these are, as much as learning sort of scenarios from a CPD point of view, they're also social events, and it is quite important that we, you know, we keep doing this sort of thing. Yeah, making sure that if you're booking two residents, you get them on the same train, they go down at the same time, you know, they get to know each other, it's all sort of falls into place. You find that you're looking after people when they need to be looked after, and it's more of a more holistic approach to, you know, instead of just giving somebody a job and that's it, here's your job, here's your salary, these are your hours of work, off you go. You're thinking, no, you're part of the family now, I've got to look after you. Mm-hmm. You know, I want you to stick around. There's nothing worse from my perspective than getting a resident or any employee giving me a resignation letter because I'm not aware of what they're going through. The profession sadly has some very high levels of mental illness that flows through it, along some of the other professions as well. And it's very important to be keeping an eye on people and befriending them and making sure they're okay. And that can be done in lots of different ways. We have, I think, the getting residents into a good practice with a good team leader and where the team's working well, it works great because they just slot in. Everybody's generally having a good time. The work's getting done and they fit in into those scenarios, you know, and it says that more holistic approach of just trying to keep people happy through those first quite difficult months, year or so of your professional career, where it can all be very different. It's very, very different when you go to work than it is at uni. Uni is great fun, you know, and I loved it, and most people do. Going into the big wide world can be quite stressful, and it's trying to make sure people manage, if they are going to get stressed, we manage that and help them through it.
And I think that's also just good to remind people that, like, so much, like, when you're getting into vet school, the big thing that's important is, okay, I have to get into vet school. And then you get into vet school and you're like, wait, now what? And then you're like, I need to get a job. And then you get the job and you're like, wait, now what again? So it's, I guess, part of preparing people for what they're going to be going into. Like, that was one of the things you talked about, was this mismatch between what they think it's going to be and what it actually is telling people, hey, you're going to have to find a support system when you graduate. Like, you're going to have to actually think about those things. And so that's also just a really cool thing to think about then, with when you're going into your interviews for your jobs, is to talk about, okay, we talk about mentorship a lot and, like, cool, that's great. But then talking about your support system, that's like a whole nother level, whether that's your friends or whether that's something that your company provides.
Yeah, that's a fundamental, is to be where are you? I would often bring this up in interview, where are your mates going to be? Yeah, they're coming, they're going to be in Manchester, Liverpool. Yeah, that'd be great. Having that support network, people don't kind of realize you have it on tap 24/7 at uni. Then you can go out and, yeah, you can be on the phone and Skype and the rest of it very easily. And if you've got your time off, hopefully you'll have a job where you're not doing out of hours. You've got the ability, your weekends are going to be a bit easier. You know, from when my day, when you had a lot of weekend work, I worked 2 and 5 when I first, for many of the years, as a general practitioner. Which is fine, I had no problem with that. But, you know, nowadays, if you don't want to work out of hours, you want your work-life balance to work for you. So having a good setup that you're into, even if your friends aren't that close, knowing that you've got a buddy or people in the, you know, you can make friends within the group. You don't want to be going into a practice where we don't have them particularly, that, you know, aren't good places to work, because the whole process of having a Medivet team there is because it is a nice place to work. We're trying to do a really good job for our clients and their pets, and that stems from having good vets working with good nurses and the team. You know, you having the empathy, the ability to communicate with your clients, but that goes across the board, ability to communicate with your colleagues. If you get on well with your colleagues, you're going to be fine. So there's a lot of different factors to it, and none of it's, you know, it's not all box ticking and the rest of it. There is some level of, yeah, certain people will do very well, other people will struggle, and it's our job to make sure that the people that maybe struggle get into the right places and are looked after effectively, so once they come out the other side, yeah, they're really flying. But there's no one, you know, one size fits all way of doing it. I think communication is at the heart of any good business, veterinary business especially. If you can communicate well with your colleagues and your clients, and you can formulate those communications early on in the practices that you visit as a student, then you'll do really well when you come out of it, because you'll know the bosses and you'll know the nurses, and things will be just a lot easier for you. But I think having good communications across the board is paramount.
Oh yeah, communication is, like, everything stems from good communication. If you have a communication breakdown, your relationships are going to fall apart, and then your business model is going to fall apart. It doesn't matter how good it is.
Yeah.
But one thing that I really liked about Medivet was this idea of not just, like, having a mentorship and all that, but fostering the different things that new graduates are interested in. Because, like, sure, everybody can come in and they're able to do surgery and all of this, but some people are going to have an interest in, like, autoimmune diseases or ophthalmology, which Medivet then offers the option of being like, hey, you have a really good interest in this. Would you like to go and do a certificate in it? So they're able to foster these little niches that their new graduates can then fulfill. Because obviously it's not like after 6 months, they're like, all right, done, you're on your own. It's like, no, we're actually trying to foster you for the next 10, 20, 30 years of your profession.
Absolutely. The whole of Medivet's ethos is built around the people that work for it. Whether they're the vets, the nurses, the PCAs, the CCAs, the client and patient care assistants, everybody top to bottom kind of makes the whole practices work. And we do a big, the model, the business model of the hub and spoke, having a centralized hospital, say, a 24/7 center being fed into by lots of branches, works well, because then you can have different people in different areas with their different skill sets. And as Maura's saying, this ability to say, right, where's your skill set? What do you want to do? I've always been a firm believer, if you're good at surgery, let's fulfill that role. If you're best at front of house, if you're good at talking to clients and you want to do that all day, but you're not so key, okay, let's do that. If you can feed the work into the backs of somebody else to do it, brilliant. If you're fantastic at generating workflow through a hospital because you're really good with clients, fantastic. If your skill set is actually you're the next Uber orthopedic surgeon or soft tissue surgeon, then that's where you need to be. And it's managing and fitting all these people into their various slots where their skill sets lie. And from a new graduate perspective, when you come in, we will foster that. And yes, you get the CPD. Everybody offers, any company you work for will offer you CPD and allowances. We will have a set amount of money put aside to put people through certificates. So if you come in within a year or two, yeah, I want to do a certificate in orthopedics or general cert in surgery or medicine or ophthalmology or internal med, we can do that. Yeah, you put some of the money from your allowance aside, but we have a centralized fund because our whole business model works. If people, A, increase their skill set and get to do what they want to do, they'll stay with the business. But also, what's not to like? It works for the business. You get to refer within practice to practice within the group to keep, you know, if you've got an ophthalmology interest or a certificate, you want people to send you all the eye cases, you know, and it increases the amount of workflow that flows through your practice and through your consulting room, and everybody wins. So it's a really good system that can work really well, and it will be properly sort of harboured by, you know, as you come in, where's your interest lie? What do you want to do, you know? And what are your timescales? What do you think you should be able to do when you want to do it? So, yeah, I think it's a very good system for keeping things in-house, making people happy. They're doing a certificate, they're happy, mm-hmm. and the business thrives accordingly. So, yeah.
Yeah, Medivet just seems to have this, even though they fall under the heading of corporate, they have this model that I've not seen anywhere else. And obviously you've worked in different corporate settings, so you've kind of gotten to be in those different settings. So you can personally compare one from the other. But I reached out to my community on Instagram and I asked them, like, okay, so when you hear the word corporate, what do you think of? And of course, like, basically everything I got back was very negative. And these are coming from vet students, so they don't have like the personal experience of being in a corporate practice one way or the other. And a lot of their fears were, they said things like, it's impersonal. You have these hardened contracts you can't get out of. You have a lack of freedom. And honestly, those were kind of the preconceptions I had of corporate as well. So when I heard of Medivet and I looked at it, I was like, okay, I'll see what this is about. Because, you know, it's another corporate, but it's a chance to learn about what's going on. And I was kind of blown away because each of those things of it being like, it's impersonal, I was like, that's not the experience I had with Medivet. Or you have no freedom, I was like, again, that's not the experience I had with Medivet.
It's the freedom thing, the contracts. Medivet's main ethos is to do a fantastic job for the client and the client's pets, and hopefully being progressive and forward thinking and just doing a great job. And nobody's really going to stand, I'm not going to stand in the way of any of my vets or nurses doing that. They come to me with an idea and it's, yeah, brilliant. If it's a good idea and it works for everybody, fantastic. Let's instigate it here. Let's try and roll it out there. Let's, you know, it's a big company and there are ways of doing certain things. But from on the ground, in the consulting room, in the operating theatre, you have clinical autonomy. You can do what you want. There are drug lists that you say, oh, you've got a drug list, so I can only use these drugs. All the drugs that are on the list are the things you're going to want to use anyway. And if they're not, you can use them, because if you come to me with the clinical reason why you want to use them, we use them. So you can look at it from both sides. It's very narrow and restrictive, and actually it's not. It works well pretty much across the board all of the time. Contracts are there, everybody's on it. You can be in an independent practice, you'd be on a contract. The contracts are no different. Medivet has a contract like anybody else. They're not prescriptive, they're not that you can't get out of them, they have probation periods, so they work for both sides. They're very good contracts in the fact that they work for both participants, Medivet and the employee. There isn't anything I can see across, you know, where people come on, we don't know who we work for. Well, it doesn't take much for me to tell you who Medivet are. I've already said about the, you know, a set of main partners and who still own it as they did all those and have the same ethos as they did before. The negative stuff does filter back, I think, probably from early days when there were one or two. There are other corporates out there and they have different business models and they are owned by different people. I'm not going to comment on them because I'm not here to, that's not my job to, you know, say anything about them. My job is to push, you know, to push the values that I believe that the Medivet have, which are all positive. A lot of this, the negative stuff, again, is fed from sort of social media platforms of people. You can get some level of ill-informed comment that comes from. There's always an issue with, and I'll say this because it does happen, you acquire a practice, and if the people who are selling it haven't engaged with the people who they employ, then you can have an acquisition process that is less than perfect because people don't like change. And that is totally understandable. And if you've ever been in that position, you will have an opinion on it. We try and do the acquisitions in the process to keep everybody as happy as we can, but there will always be times when things don't go as planned. People, you know, they don't want to be bought out or work for that corporate for whatever. But in general, we have a good acquisitions process that works well. We inform people. You can always come up with a negative and I can always combat it with a positive. I think Medivet do a good job along those lines, but it's trying to have those communications with people to say, you know, we're not this awful giant of a machine that doesn't, you know, we're trying to do a job at the end of the day that what everybody wants to do, go out there and be a good vet, work in a good team, and, you know, hopefully enjoy it somewhere along the line as well. You know, that's the point. We want to have all our guys to have good work-life balance and, you know, do a good job. Hopefully the clients come out the other end of it having had a great experience, and that's our kind of the bottom line. That's where we come from.
Yeah, because that's another one I'd have to actually talk with people who are clients to understand, like, what are their perceptions of corporate practice? Do you have any insight on that?
A lot of times they're not overly sure whether they've walked into a corporate practice or not. I think the biggest changes are when you have done the acquisition and they were Bill and Ben Vets, and now they are Medivets, and you know there's a change in the name. It doesn't happen overnight. More often than not, most people notice the first time they'll notice is when the uniform changes for staff in house, because that tends to be one of the easiest and more straightforward things. Then the stuff goes on the walls, and then you might find the telephone starts getting answered. Hello, Medivet, Chatterton, or wherever. But obviously, the client, the people in the room, the receptionists and the vets will often be saying, yeah, we bought out, you know, we're in business now with Medivet. But it will depend on how the client base perceives that. It does depend on how well the ownership, and generally the previous ownership, have gone about selling. Because if they've sold and they're not really bothered about the practice moving, they've taken their money and then they're leaving, they don't really have any involvement. And then that can have a very negative impact on the people that they leave working in place. And then that makes it very difficult for the management, my job and my managers, to have to, and the vets that are working there, to kind of come back from that, saying, no, it's not all bad. Actually, we're nice people, we're good vets. but you can have this perception of it all being all bad for those people. And again, any kind of acquisition that then involves vets leaving and the staff changing, then you have a huge amount of turmoil, and that can be disruptive and upsetting for clients. And you have to bear that in mind and try and minimise it as much as you can. And we do, but that is one of the inevitabilities of that type of process. Other processes where the person who's selling has gone into partnership with Medivet, entirely different.
Because everyone stays on. It's a friendly face.
Everybody stays on, and the person who's the boss then is now gone into business, and they're very proactive.
Yeah.
So they have an entirely different process. And they talk to their clients, say, yeah, we've gone into business. You know, it's all good. And they go, oh, brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll always be some, oh, this price has gone up, or this has happened, or that's different. And yes, there will always be some change that comes along. I think how well you manage your change will then affect how your clients perceive you. The places where people have literally moved on, moved out, I'm not told anyone at the point where they, and it can be upsetting for the people who work there, and it can be upsetting then for the clients. Those are the difficult ones that we have to manage, and that is where some of the negativity will often come from. And it is just a function of, unfortunately, how change happens. You know, even if the person, you can just end up in those scenarios, however hard you try to not be. So, you know, that is sometimes where the negativity comes from. For the most part, and I would say across the board, when you see the Trustpilot reviews, Medivec's come out very highly, you know, in the 7.5, 7.4, 7s, you know, they're marked out of 5 on the Trustpilot. They have some very high marks. So I think across the board and in the established practices, yes, they do fantastic. I think some of the negativity comes from that we hear about from the newly acquired places there where you've just had the acquisition has not been as good as you'd have liked it. But this is unfortunately how these things change. And, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes like... Then you look at like the business aspect, because obviously there's the person aspect and the client aspect is a huge part about why we do veterinary medicine. But then there's always that little tiny bit about talking about money that no one likes to do, which to a degree, going corporate, it does kind of make sense for practices, because then everything is, if you think about it, everything's bought in bulk, everything becomes slightly cheaper. So a lot of times the quality of work can go up. So that means it's better for clients. It's maybe have, like in this case, you have better mentorship programs for new grads. But then you do have those, like you just, like you said, you have some people that they've had a negative experience. They've had a bad taste in their mouth. And so it's almost like you're not going to be able to change that individual's perception of corporate maybe, but you might be able to change the next person who comes to the door. And
I think that's always going to be a challenge, how the positive stroke negative perception of what it is to be corporate. I think if you're selling in buying into the business, you're going into business with Medivet, then that outcome tends to be generally always a good one. The branches and the practices that work the best have the invested branch partners in them, and they're owned partly between Medivet and somebody else. The next best ones are the ones we've got very good quality lead vets, experienced people in, and a good team, and they're established. Anybody, and it goes across the board, if you have a bad experience, it's not usually because you're corporate, it's because you've had a bad experience, because generally somewhere along the line the communication hasn't worked well. Most issues that end up with the VDS or some level of complaint being made are usually down to poor communications. And I know this from having had my own business and working in Medivet now, this is generally what happens. And they have nothing to do with whether you're a corporate or not. It has something to do with the two people standing in the room, the client and the vet, and having a miscommunication somewhere along the line. And I don't really believe that it's fundamental to a corporate scenario. I just think that's how these things work. People who have a bad experience, yeah, we try and deal with them like you would in private practice. You approach them and you listen to people's grievances and address the issues that they have, and you do that with empathy and sympathy if they need it, and common sense and some intelligence. And at the end of that, if they still have a problem, then, you know, sometimes you can sort problems, sometimes you can't. I don't generally think there's an issue that corporates have that are any greater than if you were an independent practice. But as I say, if your notion is that corporates are bad and independents are good, then you're always going to have a viewpoint that is different to somebody else's. As I say, Medivet has a very good reputation across practices in general and across the corporates as a group. So yeah, I'm happy to work for them, and I'm happy to kind of sing their praises, because I think they're a good bunch of guys to work for, and what they're aiming to do, is a good. Mm-hmm. A good aspiration to be, you know, I think want to be the nation's favorite by 2020, I think is the aspiration.
Yeah.
And it's a good place to try and get to. From looking after students and looking after vets, I think we do a good job. I think we do a great job. I think if we can go forward and interact with our student body and get them involved, I think that's going to help us in the long term, in the short term, from recruitment and filling our practices with great vets in future. And that's what we want. I'm a firm believer that if you do a great job in the consulting room, everything else follows it. You know, if you have good people in all of those roles and they're working together well, then you go forward and, you know, everything else will follow it.
So with that, I kind of want to ask, what is something that you've enjoyed seeing from, because you've gone through all the steps and you've basically been an owner or partner for most of your career, and you've gotten to hire new grads and just see them grow and everything, but what are, in your current position, what are some of the things that you enjoy the most?
I would say probably the hiring of two simple things, really. Hiring the new graduates, and I've recently just done that with two people, And although my involvement, I get them into the positions when I talk to their mentors and say, right, we're going to bring this person in. And then I see them on a weekly basis. I pop in and I see, but seeing somebody just look up from looking down a microscope or being at a computer and turn around and grin at you, smile because they're happy, and that just gives me a buzz. And then I get the feedback that comes from their mentors, that comes through the support centre from the senior partner that deals with their residency and graduate programmes, him to write to me and say, looks like they're doing really well. I get a proper buzz from that, because I think you put somebody in a job, they get it on well, you know, it's only early days, and that aspect of it. And then at the other flip side, the other end is when you have to deal with some of the complaints, and you can read up and you can do that, and you put together a letter or an email response via letter, usually sending stuff, writing a letter, headed letter onto an email, and just getting somebody, you've dealt with it, and somebody writing back, say, thank you for that, I'll take that, that's good, thank you for doing that, and prompt, you know, somebody's had an issue on whatever it might be, and you've dealt with it, that always gives me satisfaction as well, because that's kind of the other end of the something has not gone quite as good as it should have done, but you've managed to deal with it, and that person, oh yeah, fair enough, they've responded in a timely fashion, you know, sometimes a compromise, sometimes have to explain stuff that they didn't understand. Again, the communication comes back in. And that also gives me an enormous bit of, you know, satisfaction, thinking, okay, you've managed to iron out some of the creases. Somebody who was disgruntled or wasn't very happy actually has a better understanding of what was going on and was likely to come back in the next time and be, you know, okay, we can go forward now, you know. I've always been a firm believer in, I would say to graduates come and work for me, I say, you can do the best surgery and the best through the animal's life. You can, you know, you can be a fabulous internal, you can be a medicine specialist, you can be a fabulous orthopedic surgeon, whatever. However, how you put a dog or cat to sleep at the end of its life is the thing that you will get remembered for. And your empathy and your caring nature that you show then is above anything else that you'll do. Because if you do it well, and it's a crap job to do, but if you do it well, that owner will come back in 2 months' time with a new puppy and they want to see you to get its new vaccinations. If you do it badly, if you cock it up, they will grieve for a year. They won't, if they do come and get another dog, they won't come back and see you. And that's the thing I always say to people, having the intelligence and the empathy to do that one job really well, because it's a shit job. Everybody who's doing it.
No one wants to do that. Nobody
wants to do it. But if there is a way of doing it well and effectively, that you cope with that person and you deal with it, and you know, that's always something I said, if I always felt I was doing a good job, if you can do that well, and it's one of those things that, yeah, they're not very nice things to do, especially as you get to know the pets and the rest of it. So yeah, in my career, I've always enjoyed employing new staff and mentoring them. In my medevet career now, I especially like bringing in the new guys and just seeing them take off and start getting their feet under the table and them getting the confidence. But at the same time, you have to deal with some shit stuff, and if you can do that well as well, mm-hmm. that also gives me, you know, gives me that bit of satisfaction.
Yeah, so it's really kind of cool to hear just where people are in the profession, to hear like what do they enjoy about their jobs, because that's like a little tidbit, is just what kind of jobs can you do in the veterinary profession, and one of them is you could become like a manager in a practice. But you touched on like a really big point in talking about communication and empathy and that big bubble of emotional intelligence. And as someone who is involved in the recruitment of new vets, you've gotten to see how maybe the capacity of emotional intelligence changes with each graduating class and with the type of people that are applying to your jobs. And before we had kind of talked about like what are the things that you're looking for, what are your key indicators of emotional intelligence in an interview? So do you care to kind of take us through that?
We have a standard interview, sort of many, many pages, because it covers every sort of eventuality. I mean, you tend to use it as a guidance of where you're going to go for interviewing people. And I use it in a relatively loose form, but as I was saying before, somebody's got to be able to communicate with me. They've got to be able to communicate with the client in the room. They've got to have empathy. They've got to have good good eye contact, but being able to make a joke. Lots of little things that you do. I've said to you before, when I was interviewing, and this would be a few years ago, I had an office with half a dozen people in it, and I would get the person, whoever was turning up at 9 o'clock, but I wouldn't enter the room until sort of 9:15, and I would let my guys know that somebody's coming in at 9, and they would have 10 or 15 minutes. And if I came in and they were already making a cup of coffee for everyone and chatting away like they knew them all forever, that was a great start. This person had the ability to communicate, integrate, you know, just show a bit of, do you fancy I'm going to put the kettle on? Where, if they stood in the corner when I turn up with their, you know, looking at the floor, not getting eye contact, this person, I think, is probably going to struggle to do the job I want them to do. That of being, at that point, a mixed practitioner vet. I'm going to have to send this person onto farms or into a consulting room. So it was a very good gauge of just the level to which somebody can take the lead, just get involved. Obviously, they've got students come out, they've all got lovely CVs that look great, and they've all done lots of lovely stuff, and they've all been the chairman of the committee that did the ball, and they've all been captain of the rugby club or the netball, you know, and they all look great, and they've all done lots and lots of EMS. At that point, you know, clinically, they've got a limited amount of experience, but they've got all the knowledge and they look great. But if they can come out and do that bit and they can talk and get on well with you, then that's kind of what I'm looking for, that sort of emotional ability to, you know, talk to people and you know, just get on. Can you, I always say to people, one of the, it's very important to me if as a new grad or potentially maybe a foreign graduate or a foreign vet who comes in who English isn't their first language. And the English may be okay, but their communication skills have to be really quite good to be able to communicate, because they're doing it in a second language. And so I will say to people, you know, are you happy? How do you deal with these certain situations? And I always joked that I would go and get my the NOAA compendium, because I didn't want to learn, you know, that 1,000 pages of stuff. And I'd always joke to the client that if I learned some of this stuff in one ear, something would fall out the other ear. And it sounds a stupid thing to say, but it always made people laugh. So then you could come back in the room with the book, find your dosage and say, yeah, there it is, click it on the computer, off you went. It broke the ice. I always thought I've got a strange sense of humor, I thought it was quite funny. And most people laughed when I said it. And I was talking to a guy who I'm in, the locum I'm working with at the moment, and he said exactly the same thing. I always joke about this. For another, he picked the book up and he, you know, because English was his second language, he's Italian, he would make up something again to break the ice, bit of eye contact, people didn't mind. If you shuffle out the room, you don't tell people where you're going, you don't look at them, you come back holding a book, the main perception is to people that you don't know what you're doing, whether you like it or not.
Signposting.
Absolutely. And so that was one of the things, how, when I'm talking to people, how do they communicate, the eye contact thing, just, you know, are you being natural with people? Are you showing the empathy? Have you got the ability to laugh at yourselves as well as have a joke with somebody else? Self-deprecating humor is a very good way of breaking the ice with people, because they do perceive you to be very, very, very bright and really high up on the you know, the ladder or whatever of, you know, we're looked at as a profession to be very intelligent. So if you can be, you know, dumb yourself down a little bit, it's a stupid thing to say, but, you know, connect with your client, then you're in a much better position to then talk to a client, communicate with them and find out what they need. If you're not doing it very well, the client comes out and then asks the receptionist what you were talking about. And this does happen. So it's finding that balance. I like interviewing people because I like talking to new folk, and it's always good. And you can generally know within about 5 or 10 minutes whether you like this person and whether you think they're going to have that ability to do the job. So, yeah, if I'm not going to have an interview that lasts an hour, because I'll be showing around the building and talking about lots of other stuff, but it's how well you communicate with that person, because anything, if they can do that with you and you're in an interview, hopefully they should be able to transfer that into the consulting room, into the other people they're going to work with, and that's the important stuff.
So you've actually gotten to see a lot of, like, how this has changed in the new graduates over the past, like, 20 years. Has there been any trend that you've seen that correlates to the attrition rates? I mean, you can't take it in isolate, but...
It's difficult. I think we were saying, talking about this earlier, I think we as a profession have traditionally selected for a group of people who are very, very bright, and that doesn't always transfer in that ability to communicate effectively and do that job. So you double that up with what people are expecting of a job, with what they end up doing as a job, and also how people cope with the stresses of these things. I think we look after our graduates much better than we did 20 years ago. My first day at work, when I 20 odd years ago, I was doing a C-section on a Westie on my own with a qualified nurse.
Oh.
Okay, I didn't have to do it, but I thought I'll give it a go. And it went fine, you know, and that was great for my confidence. But, you know, I wouldn't expect that to be the case now. I wouldn't put somebody in a position to do that. That was of my own doing, I must admit,
okay,
then.
Yeah.
But I wasn't forced to do it. But, you know, times have changed. It's difficult to say why we have the attrition rate we have. I think we have some levels of, as I say, a disparity between what you're going to do and what you end up, what you think you're going to do and what you end up doing. I think we select for a group of the society that are very, very bright, which is great, but that doesn't also automatically cross over to them being particularly brilliant in a consulting room and brilliant with people. But that's only that's my opinion. That's not Medibet policy or anything. That's just me. That's what I kind of just seen over the years. But as I say, I've interviewed lots and lots of great vets over the years. But it hasn't surprised me when certain people have left the profession and gone and done other things very quickly, because I think, yeah, you were probably better suited to doing that in the first place.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not. I just, you know, it saddens me in a way when people completely leave the profession, because I think, well, you know, you have taken up that position within the vet school system for somebody who may have made a really, really good vet. And, you know, so, but I think it's a very difficult circle to square with respect of trying to find what it is that's going to make a perfect vet every time, because there are so many facets to the role and the tradition. You can be a surgeon, you can be a medic, you can go into research, you can be behind the scenes, you can be front of house. So many different roles in so many different areas where lots and lots of different people will fit in. So it is a great profession from that perspective. But we end up wondering why do people leave as they do. I think we need to do a better job as a profession of looking after people to stem some of the issues we have with the mental health, the stress and those sort of things. And I think there are other professions as well suffer along those lines as well. I think as Medivet, we do a good job of looking after our young graduates that come in through the residency program and beyond that. But it's still something that, you know, work always needs to be done, I think, with these things.
And thankfully the steps are starting to move towards that. Like, we have new corporate business models like Medivet that's happening. It's all in an attempt to try and stave this wave of attrition and just this poor mental state within the profession. But I feel like that's a pretty good place to kind of leave things. But I will leave the last 5 minutes to you to kind of give a Medivet spiel if you want. If there's anything that you feel like we haven't quite covered that you'd want, maybe someone, or where can they find more information about Medivet?
You can certainly go online and look up Google Medivet. You'll find an awful lot of information out there. Hopefully via the Medivet website, web pages, as opposed to other avenues. I think we've covered a lot of what I thought we would talk about. It's been very interesting. It all comes down to communications. If you want to come into and you want to know more about it, then get in touch. And it's a matter of going through. You can phone up our switchboards. You can go online. You can email. There's lots of avenues, I think, from a profession. And Medivet going forward itself is going through a lot of changes now, and I think will be a different beast in a couple of years and years after that, but just because of how it's moving forward. I think it's a good company to work for, and that, of course, I'm going to say that I work for them, but I also work for them as I'm a self-employed individual that works under the umbrella of Medivet, and they're happy for me to do that. They listen to what people have to say, so they have a good level of communications across the board. I think they're, you know, you've got a huge array of practices to choose from. You know, there are 300 plus practices out there. Lord knows how many staff involved with those practices, but, you know, and some very, very good technical centres of excellence with all of the toys in them down to the much smaller branch level, but they're all doing fantastic work. And, you know, I think as a company to work for, I think, you know, you'd be hard pushed to find a good, but, you know, I am slightly biased, obviously.
Just a little bit.
But, you know, having seen other sides of the coin, having seen independent practices, they will give you the whole job to do what's the word? The whole package is there to be had, I think, with Medivet. I think you can earn some good money. You will have a good work-life balance. You'll get well looked after in your early years, and then in your latter years, you'll have the potential to do to further your career. And as and when you know, we've let people now have gone off on sabbaticals, and they've come and said, you know, I want to go and do surgery skill course in India. Will you hold my job for a couple of months? Yeah, of course I will. Why wouldn't I? You're going to come back more surgically skilled, nicely rested. You know, again, with people who, you know, you've got a good relationship with them, you're understanding what their needs are, you can then say, yeah, no problem, you do that. You know, we'll be here when you come back, we'll cover that. So, on that note, I think it's...
I think that is the perfect place to leave it. So, yeah, guys, I highly recommend you go and check out Medivet. There's so much to learn there. There's always someone, if you have more questions, you can, like, there's contacts there to ask questions about. But yeah, I hope this was really informative for you guys. I know for myself, I learned some new things about Medivet. I didn't know.
So well, thank cool. thank you very much for letting me have a chat with you.
All right, yeah. It's been very enjoyable. Hopefully we'll chat again soon. But until next time, guys, see ya. Hey, y'all. Thanks for following along to another episode of That Vet Life. A huge thank you to Rob for taking the time to come on the show. If you guys want to learn more about Medivet, you can go online to medivet.co.uk, where you can learn all about their EMS opportunities and their graduate support scheme. I invite you to follow That Vet Life on Instagram and Facebook at @thatvet_life. It's here that you can interact with That Vet Life and the community of vets, students, and other professionals. Lastly, guys, if you enjoyed today's episode, tell a friend. It allows me to keep creating content and get connected to awesome people like you. All right, till next time.